podcast for Game of Thrones, episode 42, entitled The Lion and the Rose. I am Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, and I am here, as always, with my small council. Say hello, small council.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
And we're here to natter you at you tonight about the second episode of the fourth season of Game of Thrones, called The Lion and the Rose. Before we get into it, we are the Nattercast. You can reach us at www.nattercast.com. And send email to us at nattercast@gmail.com. But where the real party is for us is on Facebook. As always, if you go to Facebook and search, you will find a page. We would appreciate a nice like on the page. That's where we make all of our announcements. And you'll also find a group at facebook.com/groups/nattercast. And that's where all the conversations are taking place about all different kinds of shows, not just Game of Thrones. We've talked about Breaking Bad. We're rewatching Deadwood right now. We got The Americans going. We got
Fargo.
Fargo just started up. People are talking about
that. It's good
stuff. Mad Men, as usual, of course.
Yeah.
And we have Orange is the New Black coming in. We got all kinds of great stuff. So
Derek is starting.
We got
Derek,
season two.
Second season,
which is awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's right.
So please come join us.
Excited about Orphan Black too.
There are people excited about Orphan Black. People have been asking if we could to cover. We wish we could cover Orphan Black, but we can only really sustain one show, you know, at a time, and it's got to be Game of Thrones, unfortunately, for Orphan Black. But we talk about Orphan Black in the group, so come along and join us. And also, if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher or Castroller, I've seen some of you on Castroller. You know, hit us up with a nice review, a nice 5-star rating, a nice thumbs up, you know, on any of the aggregators, but especially iTunes. It really helps us out. And I saw a couple of 5-star reviews came in on iTunes this week, and so I'm very pleased about that. And so thank you very much to our new listeners. We also run in a couple of other groups on Facebook if you want to join, where we really just talk about one show in more of a fanboy mode. And our one that we're pushing right now is I Can't Stop Watching Game of Thrones, if you want to get in there and just like completely spam a group with nothing but Game of Thrones stuff. That's what it's for. And we had a fantastic time with I Can't Stop Watching True Detective. We got like hundreds and hundreds of people there. We just started up with the Game of Thrones one, and we could use all the new users we can get. So that's it for the promo. So let's real quick go around the table and see what people thought about the show. I'd like to start with my lovely wife.
It was pretty good.
Did you like it?
It wasn't my favorite.
Yeah.
It seemed a little like the production design could have been brought up a little bit, especially at the wedding. It seemed like I could just really, there's all the stage seams,
uh-huh,
and there's the costume stitches, and it just seemed a little bit...
A little slapdash for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just was, yeah.
Danielle?
I'm not sure what was kind of off for me on it. It wasn't as enthralling as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Although Joffrey's death visually was really, really good.
I thought it was good. I thought the wedding scene was great because a little bit differently than the book, it was almost set up like a murder mystery. So
yeah, true.
We got a sequence of motives, and then we got the crime,
mm-hmm,
and it all worked together. The other stuff was a little like more like the extension of episode one.
Right.
Almost, kind of tacked on the end, but that sequence itself I thought was great, and just trying to think about it as someone who didn't know what was going to happen, I think it's, and didn't know who did it.
Right, like, right.
I think that's pretty awesome, just
the way they introduced it.
Yeah, you've got like 8 suspects. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Right.
Miss Molly.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Alan for the most part. It was set up pretty well. You know, I think all the production value went to the reception.
Right.
You know, it was just massive on a scale that I'm not sure. Well, what do they call that? The inside the episode on HBO?
HBO.com, yeah.
When they interview D.B. Weiss and Benioff, they say, you know, this was by far one of the biggest productions that they've had to film. And so that was definitely where I saw the production value. And yeah, Ellen's right. There's, you know, for someone who hasn't read the books, like me, there are a bunch of different people who could potentially be the real killer, even though we know Tyrion's going to take the fall. So
even though, for those of us who've read the books, the show could be changing the story a little bit.
Like, right.
It's plausibly that they're going to change.
Even in the books, there's some
Small
ambiguity.
Yeah, so they have a little room to play. Even for us book readers, we could be surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think, Mr. Shane?
You know, I,
I kind of gave this episode a you know, for the front half. You know, I mean, we covered a whole bunch of storylines that I don't think are particularly interesting. I mean, Theon, whatever. you know, Melisandre, that whole sequence could have been cut. I don't think we learned anything from that. Bran fondling a tree, you know. I mean, I would, if they were going to spend all this money and effort in, you know, in the wedding, why not just give us a whole episode of that? You know, Alan Sepinwall talks a lot about it in his reviews about how they need to not bounce around so much, and I think they've gotten better at that. Uh-huh. But they got so many threads they're trying to keep alive. I mean, I'd much rather have like three threads, 20 minutes per, for an episode, you know, rather than, you know, 2 to 5 minutes of jumping around for a half hour. You know, that's just not very compelling. The end sequence was wonderful. I mean, I don't really have anything to add beyond what everybody else said. I mean, that's the real meat of it. And so their ending so far, the episode's very strong each time. And I think that's, you know, what keeps me coming back very excited.
Yeah, I think I basically agree. I think the jumping around is the reason we restructured the recap the way we have. It's like it was impossible to do it chronologically in the show. It's just like, just tell the story, everything at King's Landing, and you just tell it. I think I agree about the wedding. I thought it was really well done. I liked that it was a mystery. I was very impressed with the effect and with the acting, and I think that Jack Gleason needs a slow clap. From whole internet. I mean, this kid worked like the Dickens, and he just really deserves it, especially because people hate him so much. And so it's like, we want to know, Jack, we love you, man. You really, really brought the evil of this character forward in a way.
And he's supposed to retire from acting now.
Yeah, he should play Caligula, though. He looks just like Caligula. he looks just like
him. Yeah. Wow.
Said he enjoyed playing an evil person.
Yeah,
and then he'd come back, you know, if he was broke.
He'll probably come back he'd take it. And this is a
when he realizes that he can get laid more easily if he's a big swinging.
He's a scholar,
and he'll be in a series of Die Hard sequels, looking for his detonators. In the other material, I gotta say this. First of all, I really liked the way that the Shane and Tyrion scene was shot. We'll get into that when we talk about the recap. Just the. It's another one of these like amazing King's Landing interior Caravaggio incredible Renaissance paintings that comes to life. But plot wise, I actually really liked the Bolton bit. You know, I felt like this motivates the Boltons and clarifies a couple of issues with the Boltons in a way for me that makes some sense.
It's the first time they got human.
Got human, but also like they're not just sinister henchmen.
Well, that's you know, there are very few people out there that are just like, I'm going to be evil
today. Yeah, nobody does this much henching. You have to eventually have your own motivations. So okay, so cool. I think we can probably before we jump into the recap, we have a little listener feedback just on the overall thing. Yes, right there, please.
Well, I wouldn't say this a little. We have some nice juicy pieces.
Oh, we have nice juicy pieces, but I'm being diminutive.
Katrina McDowell. Ding dong, the dick is dead. Which old dick? The wicked dick. Ding dong, the wicked dick is dead. La 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 la.
I missed that on one.
You know, it's much better with the tune.
Isn't that a little bit like a song we used to sing here?
Ding dong, the witch
that
is dead.
That has something to do with Shane.
But I don't know.
The whole blatant bullshit to me of the whole episode is when Bolton berates his son for mutilating such a valuable hostage, such as Theon, but does absolutely nothing to the man who decided to axe off the hand of Jaime Lannister. Like he was a lesser valuable hostage? Give me a break. I was actually surprised by the hunting scene. I think it showed just how far over the edge and out of control the unsupervised Ramsay had become, as he is not only torturing prisoners, but sadistically torturing innocents. Yeah, he is kind of busy.
Unsupervised Ramsay's no good.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing at
psychotic?
All.
Psychotic? I think that's a good word.
Yeah. They showed me that his psychopathic behavior is unbridled. Not just reserved for traitors, and perhaps Bolton should sleep with one eye open. I had no idea until this episode just how sadistic and dangerous Ramsay is. I don't think it's a coincidence that this side of him was brought out in this particular episode. Mm-hmm. For the viewer, non-reader, the beginning of the episode is like the birth of one truly evil, sadistic bastard and ends with the death of another one.
Yeah, I like that one, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good insight into mm-hmm. how they set up
Katrina's a smarty pants.
Yeah, she's definitely a very good addition.
Uh-huh.
Von Carl Brown. I enjoyed that episode. Feels like this season is going to be a wild ride. So much going on simultaneously, and to think all this story will be jammed into 10 episodes makes a person kind of wish they had had more than 10. Only 8 left? No!
Yes.
I'm trying to stay away from the spoilers, even though some jackass mentioned Joffrey getting poisoned on something I read accidentally. Guess I will coin the phrase, what a Joffrey.
Or look at the pie.
Yeah, that's my favorite of all time.
We're at the point where non-book readers just need to stay completely away from the internet.
Stay off the internet.
I loved the acting this week, the disdain people had for Joffrey and the Lannisters, loving the degrading poor taste of what the Boy King arranged for entertainment. Doesn't surprise me that Tyrion is getting the finger pointed at him. Without getting spoiled, it makes me hope he finds a way out for himself. So what happens to Margaery now? She just loses her queenness?
Yeah, well, she's
not queen.
She's not queen. She's never crowned.
Yeah, because they didn't consummate, right?
They didn't consummate, and there was no coronation.
Oh.
She was, you have to sign the papers.
Uh-huh.
And you have to be carried off to bed and stripped and...
Well, that's for the wedding part, but then there's also the...
Can you imagine trying to fuck that thing?
No.
Oh,
my God.
No, that's just frightening in every respect.
Don't bring your crossbow.
Well, she was seducing him in a sadism. She
knew that was what he liked.
Interest in sex.
Yeah, but don't you know when it came really down to it, you know, it'd just be a sad, pathetic lay.
I don't think he could get it up.
Not without killing something.
I think you're right, Alan.
I don't think you'd have to bring a rabbit or something. Here, twist this thing.
We're going to watch some snuff porn. Smash some ants and shit. Yeah.
Westeros snuff porn.
Oh, my God.
Well, you can bring Loras in there and get him angry, you know.
Because
yeah,
that's
that
sexy.
All right, well, let's dive into the recap, and we're going to start off with me just covering the scintillating action over on Team Hodor, as we have Bran in a warg sleep. He's got he's running around in a wolf, I guess, dire wolf. And then we hear Hodor.
Which, thank God.
Finally, Hodor. All right. And they wake Bran up, and Jojen Reed is there and explains to him that, you know, Bran complains that, you know, I was hungry. And it's like, well, when you eat, it doesn't feed your body. Let me explain to you how this works. Right? Like, for the 15th time. And so evidently Bran is kind of, I kind of like this bit. It was like a drug. He's getting seduced into spending more and more time in an animal and at the sacrifice of his body in a cold place.
And his humanity, too, right?
And he's losing his humanity.
I think that line was in there for contextual reasons of the episode.
I enjoyed watching the Stark kids lose their humanity. They each lost their humanity in a different way.
True.
So, on that note, there's a great Wim Wenders early film of his called Until the End of the World. Has anybody seen that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. It's about this guy figures out how to record your dreams and then watch them back. And people get addicted to watching their dreams.
Oh.
And it's a real expansive, really wonderful film, but it's very similar to what's happening. You can kind of see with Bran. And I believe... who's the lead guy? It was a big guy. It's very overlapping themes, and for our audience, they may get a kick out of that movie, Until the End of the World.
I saw, like, last year, they actually managed to get a photograph out of the optic cortex or something like that of a dream. It's like a hazy, human-looking figure. You know?
Wow.
Right.
Not really all that. I don't think I'd get addicted to looking at it.
No.
Really.
Pretty shitty dream.
That was the one without the zombies.
So then they haul along, and they come to a sort of like a Keebler tree, you know, like it's going to sell you cookies or something like that. It's a weirwood tree with a face. And Bran does the Vulcan mind meld with it.
I noticed that was the only place the sun was shining and
everything. Right,
too.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah.
This magical sunlight.
Oh.
In the north. And we see a dragon shadow over King's Landing, and we see...
Ooh, I missed that.
Yeah, that was one of the very final, right? Yeah.
We don't know who it is. So there's a whole controversy online in our group. I can't stop watching Game of Thrones. Where people are asking, is this the past or the future?
I missed that.
I am willing to bet so much money when they were doing promotional material, one of the FX guys was just fucking around. And he was like, this is awesome.
Yes.
And then they saw it and they're like, that's it.
Yeah. We're doing it.
Yeah. We're just doing
it. Even on the inside, or inside the episodes.
The HBO.
They say that's part of the thing is Bran doesn't know if it's past or future because he's seeing both in that sequence.
Right. So we don't know if it's past or future. I guess there's no, there hasn't been any significant physical changes to King's Landing that he would know about in paint in the last 100,000 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and
he's probably never been to King's Landing though.
He hasn't.
No.
No, he hasn't. Yeah, I guess not. Yeah. He sees his dad.
Someone pushed him out a window.
Here's a voice saying, look for me beneath the tree. He sees himself falling out the window again, and he hears a voice say, north. And so now he knows what they need to do. And what they need to do is what they have been doing.
I'm just going to say he could have been much more descriptive.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the north has more than one tree. And also vague sense of north.
We need to keep going north.
Great.
Okay.
So I have a question. Going back to when Sam and Gilly were running around somewhere last season, up around Craster's Keep, didn't they run into one of those trees?
Yes, they did.
Many. In fact, they show it in his flashback.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe they were at one when the White Walker attacked.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Right. I was like, I've seen this tree before.
And that's where the flood of Raven's shot.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That ties it all together.
And we saw when Hodor was naked, didn't we?
What?
Yeah, that was in the gods.
Season 1 Pencils when Hodor was walking around naked.
It's interesting. That was in the gods. But there were like 12 or 13 scenes there, and you noticed the one with the giant penis.
Believe it or not, that's another one I missed. And then people were talking about it, and I had to go back and rewatch. But then I read an interesting article about how much body pain he had and a prosthesis.
It was her
that was sticking to hair.
Oh, wow.
It was very uncomfortable.
That's never a good thing.
With the fake phallus.
So he had a Diggler outfitted on?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Oh, well, so that's my pathetically short. I'm going to be batting a little cleanup on the wedding with Molly, so I gave myself the short... short stick. So I'm now throwing it over to Alan for Team Bolton.
Oh, yes,
Shane.
I have a semi... I don't know if this is a book reader question. I don't know. It's very unclear to me. This whole Bran storyline is starting to feel awfully Theon-ish in the sense that, you know, it's just go north, and we cut back to Bran, and, oh, yeah, they're still going north, and there's some mysterious raven that he's supposed to be looking for, and... That whole storyline needs to be grounded in some way, shape, or form with a little bit of clarity. Or the longer it keeps going like this, it's just going to die on the vine.
There's not enough variety to it. I mean, it's clear to me because it's like find the three-eyed raven. There's nothing less clear, you know, more clear than that. But there's no steps to finding the green-eyed raven except for walking north.
Right.
Or why does it matter? That's the other problem I have is, okay, he gets that finds the three-eyed raven, and then what?
Well, he's trying to fill his prophecy or his calling or whatever. And like the other characters, you know, part of it is the journey and who he becomes during the journey and what he learns about himself and what he learns about his abilities. And
I think it's about the warging ability. Right, so it's about they've had him possess Hodor and all this other stuff. Yeah, Alan.
Yeah. In the show, I think it's they're doing the proxy of like Jojen has told him he's got to do this or like the world ends. Like he said that a couple times. Like I think even in this episode, he intimates he's like everything's lost if you're lost. You can't do this.
Yeah.
So that's where they're going. In a little bit of book play, I don't think they'll ever get to. For Bran, you know, the three-eyed raven has actually promised him that he'll fly.
Right.
I think as a child, he thinks that when he gets there, he's going to be able to walk again.
Yeah.
And that's very much in the book story. The other problem with this, and I think where they're struggling, is it's not a very long story in the books. No. I mean, it's by far the fewest number of chapters. They're already into the Dance with Dragons storyline, and I think that's only 3 chapters in that entire book.
Right.
It's actually going to be really interesting to see how they flesh this out.
That's so strange, because it feels like if it's that short that they could have shot him out while he was still young.
Yeah.
And been done with it, and had all brand, because they're in the north. It's not like it's a bunch of variety.
He's got an aging kid.
He's got the Aryan Sansa. I would like to see, and having not, I've only just started reading this last 2 books, so I don't know where everything goes with it. But I would like the show, and I don't think it would be inconsistent with the books, like to see him being more frustrated with his paralysis.
Agreed.
Directly, making it a medical problem. That he and making it clear that he thinks that, like you said, that he can walk again. Right. That he's solving something where his legs are deteriorating, his circulation is deteriorating.
I think it's going to become a more clear problem, maybe not as a personal medical problem, but in the context of the plot, because they're adding this element that we learned during the Bolton segment, that they're about to have a pursuer.
Right. And that'll pep things up a little bit, especially if it's in the Boltons.
That'll get you moving north.
Speaking of Bolton's moving north, Mr. Allen.
All right.
Take it away.
So, with our Bolton friends, we start out with that hunting sequence at the beginning, and I think the person who wrote in feedback on Christina kind of hit it on the head. You've got just unbridled psychopathy, right? Which is an interesting either passing the torch to Joffrey, or when we get to the Joffrey part, we can talk about other things. But what did you get? Was that too far for people?
The hunting?
The hunting. I mean, it was an exciting action sequence to start, and then it turned abjectly sadistic.
I think it's kind of like the Bran storyline that non-book readers don't really understand what the hell they're going with this, and why are we still watching
this?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
this
it was
is getting
like,
old, and haven't we seen enough torture?
Right.
Shouldn't we be done with this by now? Just fucking kill him already.
Yeah, it's like,
you know, because they don't.
I mean, for me, it was like, yeah, I know the guy is sadistic and psychotic anyway after what he did to Theon. Why do we have to see him torture some pretty little blonde girl just because she's pretty? You know, it's like, I get that adds a sadistic and evil nature to what he's already done, because this is someone he doesn't know, but it's still not really. I was still like, why? That gratuitous violence? I don't know.
I timed it out at 2.5 minutes, that sequence. That's a long time for us to spend essentially revisiting the fact that the guy's a psycho. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We did get a little bit of reek there, right?
Yeah.
Well, it did take it up a notch, his psychoness up a notch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's taken his show on the road.
Yes.
And now there's absolutely no economic or political social gain. It's just because.
Yeah.
Up a notch from cutting off dicks? Come on.
Theon's still alive.
Yeah. I think
so. But maybe that might not be such a hot thing for Theon.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the most value that scene had was seeing how obedient Theon has become.
Yeah, and I don't know where the Reek storyline goes.
Although I think you saw his obedience more in the shaving.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
And the tension in the shaving.
So that scene might have been.
Which reminded me of The Color Purple.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
So we move back to the Dreadfort, and Bruce arrives, and he's got his lady wife there.
Yes.
Fat Walda.
That was a little callback.
Which was just like a total, since her dowry was paid in silver or gold.
Oh, right.
Her body weight. Yeah.
Right.
The largest woman possible, which is just a wonderful little thing for Roose, and weirdly, creepily, there's a little bit of flirting or something.
It's awesome.
With Ramsay.
It was cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, he calls her mother.
Yeah, he calls her mother, and I don't know if he's thinking of putting her on a spit or like.
I wonder what she's thinking, because, you know.
She didn't seem very bright.
No.
She seemed like she was happy that somebody was nice to her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
That's the way I read it.
And I thought it was like. Oh, yeah, well, thank you for acknowledging.
And at least the Boltons are cleaner than
the
Freys.
Remember, as a Bolton, she's supposed to be one of dozens and dozens of daughters, because he's had how many broodmare wives?
Yeah,
as a
so,
Frey.
And
as a
obviously,
Frey.
Yeah, the Freys, sorry.
Yeah.
And obviously, she's not the most conventionally attractive one.
Right.
So she's probably used to always being overlooked.
Also, She did not get murdered at her wedding.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, so, there's a plus.
She's probably just riding.
I don't know if. Yeah, I'm not sure if body image is the primary issue. It's more not murdered.
Yeah.
And then we get a little bit of the Maimers Club with Locke and Ramsay chit-chatting about cutting off limbs, which is pleasant. But then we get to the crux of the whole episode where Roose has Ramsay bring Theon to him so he can look him over. And at first, Roose upbraids Ramsay for, as one of our readers or listeners pointed out, that, you know, he may have damaged some goods that Roose may have wanted to pay for something with. And we hear the first of a little bit of strategic importance of a set of towers called Moat Cailin that's basically in an isthmus in the middle of the north and the south that whoever holds it can keep anyone from passing. So Roose's army is south of this and he's north of it, and Tywin Lannister has given him the north, but he's not going to help him take it. So he's angry, he wants to trade it, and he upbraids Ramsay for it, and Ramsay points out that, you know, we flay people, that's what we do, it's up on the wall.
Right.
and Roose very clearly says, you're not a Bolton.
Yeah.
Like, you're Snow, get in your place, and all that. And that's the first time I think we see Ramsay actually show any sort of source of motivation, as he's obviously tremendously crushed by this. You know, I'm not feeling sympathy for the man, but we get a little bit out of it. And so in response, Ramsay decides to prove that his actions with Theon were worth something. Right. So he asks him to shave him.
Right. And we have a little audio on that, so let's listen to the shaving scene.
Go on, Reek. A nice, close shave. Reek, tell Father. Where are Bran and Rickon Stark?
I don't know, my lord.
You murder them and display their corpses at Winterfell.
Reek, did you murder the Stark boy?
No, my lord.
Just two farm boys. And crisped them so no one would know?
Yes, my lord.
The Starks have always ruled the North. If Bran and Rickon are alive, the country will rally to their side. Now that Robb Stark is gone.
Oh, that's right, Reek. Robb Stark is dead. Sorry. I know he was like a brother to you, but my father put a knife through his heart. How do you feel about that?
You ready for a hunt?
Always.
Find those boys and I'll give you 1,000 acres and a hole first.
Okay.
So I love that.
I thought that was really well performed.
Yeah.
You know, I buy the sadism. I buy the brokenness of Theon. I haven't seen Theon act that well prior to this.
Yeah.
So I liked it. You know.
I agree. That's one of the better scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also the strategic element of now Bran and Rickon's being alive is known to at least the Boltons.
Right.
So that puts a little pressure on that story, which I do think is really, really light right now. So
yeah, and it shows you Reek is broken, and I love the backstory that's kind of hinted in there. We didn't really hear it in there. It's a little bit earlier, but how the Boltons have been around for a very long time, and the Starks have been around for a very long time, and that the Boltons have been waiting for this opportunity.
For like
thousands of years,
yeah. It's just like these are huge dynasties that we're dealing. What this is the part I don't get with the show. It's like, well, you know, my family's been ruling this for 1,000 years. It's like, were all of your ancestors as stupid as you are? Because it's difficult to understand how your family survived for 10 centuries in essentially the same place when you just completely fucking threw it all out the window. In 16 years.
There's not as much subtlety up north. I think it's much more hitting people over the head with swords.
Okay, cool. So now I guess we are moving on to Miss Danielle, who's going to take us through Team Stannis and some King's Landing.
So let me start with Stannis. Back at Dragonstone, the night is definitely dark and full of terrors. Stannis is torching people that refuse to convert to the Lord of Light or tear down their idols from the old gods and the new gods, including Lord Florent, who is his wife Selyse's brother. Uh-huh. And once again, Davos. I was blanking. Davos is trying to make Stannis look at things the way most people would look at things. And Stannis is saying that, you know, he's an infidel. And Davos says, how many ships did he bring to the cause? How many men? And he tells Davos, more than you. So in other words, shut your trap.
But then Davos says, like, maybe later on, say, I'd never seen a war that was won by prophecies and all this, all this, you know, magical mumbo jumbo. It's like you win by fighting. With an army.
Right. Yeah. And then we see a lovely family dinner on Dragonstone. And it's the Red Woman, Lady Selyse, and...
Melisandre.
That's the Red Woman. Oh, and Stannis.
Stannis. Right,
I've been calling her the Red Woman lately for some reason. And maybe because I'm Team Davos or something. And it's interesting how the daughter is never incorporated in anything. She's just out. She's basically like a captive.
Well, these people are completely freaking hypnotized cultists. She's like the only normal person. Like, her and Davos need their own whole show.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like Stannis, I mean, he's very pragmatic about all this. Like, I have a feeling the instant her prophecy is like, you're going to lose Stannis, he's just going to, like, chop her head off. I mean, while the whole thing was burning, he was like, let me check my watch. Can we get this going? And, like, his wife is like, orgasming on the beach, right?
Right.
Like,
she's frightening. I'm sorry.
And he's just like,
let's scary. Yeah.
But Davos is making a good point. It's like, do you really want to win this way? Wouldn't you rather just lose? How bad could losing possibly be? They'll kill you and it'll be over. This is ridiculous. Yeah.
Come on, Stannis is obviously peewit, you know? I mean, come on.
I guess so.
I mean, what else could explain this? I mean...
She gives him smoke babies. I mean, jeez.
Exactly.
We can give you smoke babies, take her long.
Who knows what else it can do? I mean, I might be peewit too.
It's not.
That would be a scene where Stannis is just like, dude, shut up. It's fantastic. Crazy equals fantastic sex.
Fantastic.
Have you not heard this?
Easy.
Just shut the fuck up.
The thing is, speaking of storylines that go nowhere, and I know a little bit about from the book, but just looking at where this is, it's like. This goes nowhere, too. He has no shot at taking King's Landing or Casterly Rock or anything else like that. He doesn't have his host together. He's been smashed up. And it just feels like there's no military plan. There's burning a lot of blood.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and burning your own guys. Burning them. You know, it's like, well, you get less guys that way.
Yeah.
They don't even have decent meat.
But you do have some really entertaining dinners. I would have loved to have been a guest at that.
They should open an Olive Garden.
Like Selyse blabbering like Mrs. Peacock and Clue. Like, I don't know, but I'm entertained in D.C. And Stannis just like, really, just stop.
Just stop. So, all right.
And then Selyse wants to punish their daughter, and Stannis will have nothing of it. And she calls her a stubborn little beast, says she's sullen and sinful. And suggests that the lady Melisandre talk to her. And she says that she heard the fire from the beach and knows that her uncle was in there. And then, you know, Melisandre starts kind of telling her story and how she found the Lord of Light and how that saved her. And she tells her there's only one hell, princess, the one we live in now.
Yeah, and she grew up in poverty and how the Lord of Light saved her. And the fact that she's stunningly attractive. Lord of Light and stunningly attractive.
Right.
These are the two things that helped me out. The Lord of Light is not helping out a lot of really pug ugly people who are still poor.
No.
you don't see Walda on...
exactly.
You
know. Walda or Wolva or Wilhelmina.
Or Wolva.
Any version of Walter you can do. I will say, one of my favorite quotes in the entire episode is here. Stannis at one point says something to the effect of, well, there's a lot of... I put up with a lot of stuff that I, like, despise.
Right.
And you're just like, wow. Right? You're looking straight at your wife right there. Like there's no...
no ambiguity on that one.
Yeah. That is... I love Stephen DeLane. He just...
He's really good.
I don't really like Stannis in the books, but I think he's fantastic in the show.
He's... Yes. Yeah. I can actually watch Stannis all day.
Yeah. Yeah. He was one of my favorite things about the British-French remake of The Bridge. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I've only seen the American.
It was a BBC production, and I think it's actually the best of the three. I think it's better than the original Danish and way better than the American. But Stephen DeLaney plays the you know, one of the lead cops.
Oh, the lead cops.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. He's being underutilized here.
But, yeah. Correct.
But it's the appropriate role for him, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to move on to the beginning of King's Landing. So when we first see any activity at King's Landing, it's Pod serving breakfast to Tyrion and Jaime, and they're having a private breakfast in what I assume is Tyrion's chambers or room. Mm-hmm. And this is right after a scene with Theon Reek, and they're showing big, fat, juicy sausages. So that's definitely a little bit of a...
flash cut right on in.
Yep.
And they're drinking wine for breakfast.
Yeah. You know it's bad when you're getting taunted from like 4,000 miles away.
Yeah.
And Tyrion compliments Jaime on his new hand. And then Tyrion's like, you know, I know all this crap's going on, but I'm starving, and why doesn't anybody else want to eat, and what's going on here? And I'm thinking, Tyrion, hold on. You may very well soon lose your appetite as well.
Yeah.
And then the best line out of that one was that they are the dwarf, the cripple, and the mother of madness.
I love that. Really... hey, did you notice how they really? First of all, they've been setting up Tyrion for being framed for Joffrey's
mm-hmm.
murder really right. well since last season,
right?
The conflict.
Yeah.
But in this scene, have you noticed throughout this episode that they really emphasize Peter Dinklage's diminutive stature? So you see his little legs. Don't reach the floor from his chair, and they're shooting him from these angles where being a little person is really being emphasized.
Yeah,
and I thought it was a nice subtle way of just driving that home that Joffrey's going to use that against him.
Yeah, yeah. I also enjoyed how they are good friends, right? They are close siblings,
right?
But you could definitely tell Tyrion was kind of enjoying the fact that his golden boy brother was now.
Well, yeah, it's amazing to me that they are good friends because you think. I mean, Jaime set up his whole first marriage.
Yes.
That was pretty fucked up. I mean, they must have had quite the forgiving process. You know, if somebody did that to me, I'd be a little upset with them for a long period.
Jaime's the only one that's ever, ever given any kind of a damn about it.
I think Jaime regretted that enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that have been done to Tyrion over the years, he wasn't behind.
Yeah.
Or, you know, on board with, I should say. And then we find out what bad shape Jaime is in terms of fighting, and he says he can't fight with his left hand. He can hold a sword, but all of his instincts are wrong. And he's in this dilemma of how does he practice to get better without somebody finding out. You know, he has to spar with someone. And then he says, how could I protect the king when I can hardly wipe my own ass? And you definitely feel for him somewhat in this regard. And then, you know, you need a proper, discreet swordsman. It, as it happens, I just have the one.
He's really, really discreet.
Right. And then we go into the...
For the right price.
Yeah. Then we go into the Jaime and Bronn scene, and I don't think we've ever seen that particular spot before. That's a pretty cool spot.
It's a pretty cool spot, yeah. It's a terrible spot to learn swordplay, but it's a very cool spot.
Unnecessarily dangerous.
Yeah.
But it's an awesome spot to have a little adultery, evidently.
Apparently, yeah. Yeah, so we learned that Bronn... fucked, as he says, a knight's wife. I didn't recognize the name, and that she's a screamer. So he's pretty confident that if they don't hear that, they won't hear them rehearsing.
Ever the discreet Bronn.
Yes.
That's
where Jaime is resembling the woman who is shocked to find her man is cheating on her when she cheated
with him.
Right, yes. He cheated on his last girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, he literally is like, "I'll be discreet." By the way, I'll be discreet because I'm fucking this guy's wife right here.
Exactly.
Let me tell you his name and everything.
You keep using the
and
word.
How loud the bitch is.
Yeah.
Right. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Jamie's not.
I'm a skilled swordsman in more than one way.
I have fucked half the Martell family down here.
That's right.
Male and female.
While the other half watched.
So let's move along. Moving to along. Varys and Tyrion. And they're walking and
Shane's
talking.
Losing it.
Bronn's a pet, man.
And we learn that Varys knows that Sansa's maid saw Tyrion and Shay together, and that Cersei's already been told, and it's only a matter of time before Tywin knows. And
actually, we have this scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Let's hear a little. So this is a. I'm sorry, I should have jumped in on that. Tyrion and Varys. In a moment, because I put on too much leader on the track, so I'm going to ramble for half a second here. And here it comes.
Lord Varys, breakfasting with the king?
I'm afraid foreigners aren't welcome at such exclusive affairs.
Oh, to be foreign.
Shay has been noticed. Sansa's maid saw you with her. She already told your sister. It's only a matter of time before your father hears.
So I'm guilty of being seen with my own wife's handmaiden. My father will ask you if there's anything more, and you'll tell him some clever lie.
No, I will not. How long do you imagine your father and sister would let me live if they suspected me of lying? I have no pet cell sword to protect me, no legendary brother to avenge me, only little birds who whisper in my ears.
Forgive me if I don't weep for you.
No one weeps for spiders or whores. I have friends across the sea who could help her.
She won't leave. I've told him this is a dangerous place so many times she no longer believes it.
Your father has promised to hang the next whore he finds you with. Have you ever known your father to make an idle threat?
So I like the way that that emphasizes the jeopardy for Tyrion.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's just been around too long.
And he's the one who's got to make the choices here, you know.
Right.
But, yeah.
Okay. So anybody else have anything on that? No.
We'll finish up.
No, I mean on the Varys and Tyrion.
Okay. Yeah.
And then there's some sort of pre-wedding celebration where they're receiving gifts, and this is where we see Cersei whispering to Tywin that, you know, there's the whore, and he says have her brought to the Tower of the Hand before the wedding. And that could mean a lot of different things. And then Tyrion gives
Joffrey.
I'm like the little shit, can't think of his name. A book titled The Lives of Four Kings, and says it's, you know, must reading for any king. And at least he's not being a total little shit yet. It's
early in the day.
It's
yeah, well, Tywin gave him a look. Oh my god. He's like, don't you dare. Don't you dare. Just go with it.
Yep. And then he receives the other sword. So we find out what happened to the second sword that was made from ice.
It was made from ice, yeah.
Yeah.
Valyrian.
And he ends up naming it Widow's Wail, which ends up being really fucking funny. But yep.
Yeah.
And he says, every time I use it, it'll be like cutting off Ned Stark's head again. As if he personally did it the first time.
Right.
I don't know if I would have given him this particular sword.
Yeah. Maybe made him earn it over
or something.
Time.
Yeah. Just hold it out for us. Yeah.
Remember the last sword he had was taken by a little girl and tossed in the river?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another
thing. It was two swords ago, to be fair.
You have a heart eater.
Two
where
swords.
Where he ran from the battle.
So he names it Knuckle Biter.
Pillow Biter.
Pillow Biter.
There you go.
No, that's Loras' sword here.
And then we have the Shay Tyrion scene, and he tells her that there's a ship waiting in the heart. First she's like, you know, where are you going to bend me over and let me have it, my little lion, and all that kind of stuff. And he's like, yeah, not now, honey. And then he tells her there's a ship waiting for her in the harbor bound for Pentos, and there's a house and servants waiting for her. And he insists he needs to uphold his vows and not dishonor his wife or his children, who... He doesn't have children yet, but he's...
The and he puts her down pretty strong, too.
And when she's not listening, then he tells her, you're a whore, which is what she's been telling him since day one.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's kind of funny. She's like, you know, she starts it out like, you know, we can be this loving romantic thing like you've been telling me.
But she can't.
And then he's like, no, you're a whore. So it's like they reversed places.
Well, he
where
he
he's
also
been trying to convince her that they're in love, and she's been trying to convince him that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
and she's acting like she's almost believing it now.
He really played the put down game with the "you're not qualified to have my children." Though.
Right,
that
kicking
was
her to the cry.
That was low.
Right. She was offended because she wasn't Shay the funny whore.
Yeah,
she's
like, she don't think I'm funny.
I am not funny.
True.
We have a little feedback on this scene.
Ah, yes, Michael Mesmer. The Tyrion Shay dilemma, albeit a little less deadly level, is played out at length in the second half of Tender as the Night by F. Scott.
Fitzgerald, I guess.
Yeah, he did put Fitzgerald in there.
As opposed to all the other famous
Scott. I hurt her to get her to leave because she's better off away from me. And Christina Scanapaggio, this one's kind of fun. As for the Tyrion and Shay thing, I don't know. A ship with your own cabin, your own house across the sea, servants, a comfortable life. It doesn't seem so much worse than having to braid your lover's child's bride's hair while he rebuffs your offers of blowjobs and desk sex. Well, I take that offer right now. And the worst part of my day is Google Analytics and an uncomfortable swivel chair.
Yeah, I think Shay on the show, they really did an Uncanny Valley thing with her character because they've made her more interesting and sympathetic in some ways, but also completely illogical.
Yeah.
Right, because she's just, you would, in the position she's in, she would not resent that he marries a noble woman and all that kind of stuff.
Someone that comes up a camp follower is not that romantic.
Right. But even if she was, she would still be have to be a little bit realistic or she wouldn't have survived being a camp follower.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, so.
Now, I mean, we talked about this briefly before, but I think the scene was executed well. The acting was phenomenal. The writing was as good as it could have been. But I hate these scenes.
You hate
in every movie. Yeah. That's just like, you know, it only works when the person you're shooing away is an animal.
Right.
Like, yeah. This is the only time that, like, actually telling the
or
truth.
Or small child.
I mean, honestly, I would have, it would have drug it out. I understand why they didn't do it. But it would have made a lot more sense if she had been like, okay, as she was an episode ago, you're obviously lying to push me away.
Right.
Yeah. I think I would have accepted it better if Bronn had just conked her over the back of the head and, like, dragged her out.
Bag her.
Yeah. Because it's almost like, okay, we're going to do this thing where, like, she's heartbroken because he's obviously lying. Like, I just don't think anyone's that stupid.
Right.
And we see it in movies and shows all. Well, and, like, it's a staple.
And then she says, like, you know, we'll fight them. And it's like, okay, let's talk how.
Yeah,
how are we going to fight Tywin Lannister?
Yeah, and she's like, threatened I'm not to kill you. Him.
He's got. Wants to put your head in the noose.
I should be thankful. I guess it wasn't as cliche as she caught him in an accidental situation with another woman.
Oh right, yeah.
Like, there's a big
wacky physical mix-up.
And they don't talk to each other for like 2 weeks, and then he does he gets a boombox.
Perhaps Rod was still around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
but this does mean we're done with Shay, right?
No.
Nah. Not yet. She's still in existence.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah.
And
from what I've heard, there's an interesting scene coming.
Well,
let's not spoil.
I will say that it was interesting that he had to ask Bronn like 3 times whether she got on the boat.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think that was an accident.
They definitely left it questionable.
Right.
That's when my heart sank a little. Then, damn it! Every time I heard him ask about that,
why are you asking again?
Don't ask again.
You horrible people.
Okay, so we here at the Nattercast have given Molly the heavy lift for the week.
Woohoo!
So the rest of us are going to leave.
The rest of us are leaving, and she's going to give you a blow.
Last season, she got all the bad boys.
Well, she had. I don't know if you saw this, Molly, but at one of the threads in our group on Facebook, everybody was going on and on about how you could read them bedtime stories with your voice.
Yes, I saw that.
That was the idea. Everyone likes Molly's voice.
But we got offers to cuddle with the same person.
Yeah.
While Molly read.
Yeah. I thought it was a nice trio thing.
Yeah. I like that girl a lot, too.
Yes.
So just because there's so much to cover, I'm going to follow Jason's lead and just say, here's the scene, here's my reaction, and let's go from there.
Set it up and punt it.
Yeah. So the first thing we see is the ceremony in the Sept of Baylor. Thank you, Danielle. Mm-hmm. And my first instinct is to go Joan Rivers and go, oh my, the dress, the hair.
Yeah, wow. Marjorie's hair got my attention.
Wow, yeah. Seriously? Holy cow, that's quite
enough
to.
Serious cake hair.
Oh, yeah. That's like right up there with Marie Antoinette.
She's got varmints living in that one.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking they shaved a few heads to make rats, you know, to get that stuff up in the air.
Oh!
Oh, it was amazing. It was like all
fantastic.
Especially when you see her in profile, he looks like an alien or something like that.
Yeah,
upside down chandelier.
You're selling me on it.
Yeah, and then the one other thing that I'm going to digress slightly here is that on the HBO.com site, they did interviews with the customer, and they had some pictures up there, and they had a picture of a close up of her dress, and the back of her dress is all rosebuds. You see the train, and you don't quite realize what it is. It's all handmade rosebuds.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. I'm like,
hinged.
Whoa.
Hinged.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a ceremony, and at the end we get the happy cousin. What cousin? No, not cousins. Tyrion and Sansa.
Aunt and uncle.
Aunt and uncle. Yeah.
Yes, aunt and uncle.
And, oh, look, we have a new queen. And Tyrion goes, better her than you.
Seriously, you
very true. I was like, that's the truest thing he's ever said.
You don't want to be the queen.
So this was a short scene. I don't know if anybody has any real things to say other
not
than...
Really. It looked great.
Yeah.
It looked
great. Yeah.
And it was one of these things where it's really nice that they established the Sept.
Yeah.
So much over the seasons where you're like, okay, you know, this is what it's really meant for.
Right, yeah. Right.
It reminds you of Sansa being beaten, her clothing torn off in that same room. And
yeah, yeah.
Kind of reminds you of some of the other scenes from there.
Yeah, and I like the shots of the audience. They're all standing there, mm-hmm. and you can just see the different looks on people's faces, like Cersei and Tyrion and Sansa and... Tywin and Oberyn, Varys is in there somewhere, you know, and it's just like all the different things running through people's minds. And
I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but there is a line in the ceremony that's something to the effect of anybody that breaks this union is a curse from the gods or something.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
Right, and they focus back, and who's sitting over the shoulders? But it's Oberyn and Olenna.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
just a little nice. Something to think about as we go.
Yeah.
Oh, yep, that reminds me of the other thing. Joffrey doesn't need a stool to put his cape on Marjorie's shoulders.
Joffrey.
Smack
down.
So
it was an extremely awkward kiss, too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was just like horrible Joffrey kiss.
Oh, but he didn't kill her yet. That's nice.
Slimy, weird senior prom kiss.
I was trying on how Oberyn and Ilaria always looked at their 5 seconds from getting it on.
Oh yeah,
you know
they are. Yeah, they're always like in gear and just ready to roll.
And there's no reason for this to come and play for the TV adaptation, but just an interesting, fun kind of thing. He's supposed to have 8 daughters, 4 with Ilaria, and they're called the Sand Snakes.
Oh,
that sounds like a party.
Because their last name is Sand.
They're all sand.
They're all bastards.
Okay.
Does that now? Hold on a second. They're bastards because he's not married to her.
Right.
Yes. That's correct.
Or to any of his.
And he's the Red Viper, so his daughters are snakes.
It's just like Kill Bill.
Yep.
Has he been referred to on the show as the Red Viper?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Just
okay.
Prince Oberyn.
Yeah.
All right, so moving along.
Thankfully, the wedding ceremony is short. It's not Catholic.
Yeah, really. Or Catholic and Spanish or something.
God. Stop.
Yeah.
And we're on the procession to the reception, so we're walking down these lovely little wooded paths, and we have Tywin and Lady Olenna, which these two are just a fantastic coupling because they are the clearly the two people who are the smartest heads of families.
And they're the matriarch and patriarch.
Yeah, here. And... Yeah. And they're, you can't put anything past either one of them.
No.
Old as dirt and evil as hell.
And they're complaining about the Iron Bank, and she's like, oh, let's just celebrate young love.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Tyler.
She makes her point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You still need my money.
Yeah.
Just remember that. You always need my money.
Yeah.
I especially enjoyed how her son comes up and is about to walk with them, and she's like, get the hell out of here.
I would have paid $10 to get Charles dance into that Ali G outfit. just for the dance. You know?
Yeah.
And I saw some people asking online whether her son had been shown before, and this is Mace Tyrell, the father of... Marjorie.
Right.
And it reminded me that she previous called him the Lord Oaf of Highgarden.
Yes.
So you can tell she doesn't have a lot.
He's the one who like stormed the mess hall of whatever he took.
I have in my notes, oh, she just shuts him down like a child, and he just obeys.
This is happening.
He's so well trained. Yeah. But yeah, that was a really good exchange between them, and you know that he's dependent on her money and her supplies, and
so is King's Landing.
Yeah, and it's not going to stop because
she knows what position she's in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This what I thought was the first of many first time exchanges that we've seen on the show between big characters. Right. I mean, we've never seen Tywin and Olenna.
Right.
Really go at it like this, and you know, whether it's Loras and Jaime or you know all the various scenes that come through the sequence, that to me was
that's what the wedding is all about, right?
It's
about,
about
pairings,
and I think the showrunners afterwards were like, this is one of the few times where they were able to get this many people together, so they kind of forced more together and had as many interactions as possible.
I think that Diana Rigg was actually talking about the financing of the show. It's like we're into the Iron Bank for $6 million just for the wedding scene.
This is Avengers money, people.
Yeah.
The only other time we did see them together was last season when they were discussing who was going to marry who, and Tywin was about to send Loras off to the wall or something like that if he didn't marry Cersei.
and they make a point of the leftovers and stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm trying not to give anything spoiler about books, but just context. They were supposed to have 77 dishes served.
Whoa. Yeah.
Where, you know, seven's a good luck number because, you know, seven
gods.
So they could have done seven.
77.
Seven might have been a little
And that was like, is this really necessary? This is going to cost so much money.
77 different dishes. That's very Roman. And then it's like, you can't take 77 even quarter bites, like a little tiny bite.
Yeah.
Enough to taste it. 77. Different foods in your stomach is not a good idea.
No.
Well, and then dancing after that.
It's also like medieval timing, right? Yeah. So it's not like they were able to like, well, we can call on some Thai dishes or some like South American influences. It's just pretty much like English food.
Or we're having a potluck. We made her order some Chinese just in case there's not enough.
This is our 14th pot roast. Awesome.
And beans.
Yeah, a lot of casseroles.
So now we're actually at the reception, and we see Tyrion, Bronn, and Pod. And Shane, this goes back to you. And how many times can he ask Bronn, did she get on the boat?
Right.
I'm on a boat.
And then the next question is, did she stay on the boat until it left?
Did she stay on the boat all the way out?
Because I can see her just stomping her little crazy ass back off.
Yeah, exactly.
I love you, my lion. Get the fuck out of here. Will you leave?
But here is also where you start to see some of the production value that they threw in. They've got all these extras and performers and
wide open coochie.
Well, yeah, we're getting to that one. That one hasn't come up yet.
Oh, okay.
But it's totally there. because right now we're still trying to get rid of coochie.
That's because there's so much available.
Wow, there's a lot of coochie here. For a wedding.
I can't be bringing Shay to this wedding. Look at the bridesmaids.
Yeah, so I love Bronn's line of, now go get drunk until it feels like you did the right thing.
Yeah. That's not a yes.
Right. Yeah. Anyone else?
No, are we ending just on Bronn and Tyrion?
Yeah.
I just always love the Bronn and Tyrion show. It's like, are you sure? Are you really sure? Are you really, really sure?
And
bloody well sure as I can be.
Yes. And so right as all of this is breaking up, you do see the lovely contortionist. And Oberyn and Ilaria coming through, and you see, hello, but I don't think they're talking to Tyrion. I think that was already a meme on the internet. Yeah. So then we move over to Lady Olenna and Sansa. And this is up at the high table. Sansa, for whatever reason, is already seated. Lady Olenna comes over, and this is a very interesting exchange. as if men needed more reasons to fear marriage. She's giving her respects for the death of Robb Stark.
Right.
And clearly making jokes that Tyrion is now broke, but if he sells his mule and his last pair of shoes to send her over to Highgarden, it would be a lovely place for her to visit.
Right.
And she goes on to talk about how...
Especially your husband's indicted for murder.
Right.
it's a lovely place to sit out a murder trial.
And now it's time to go eat some of this food I paid for. And I'm just like, oh, she's not bitter. No. No. Not at all.
I think she actually wants to get Sansa out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if she, poisoned Joffrey or not or whatever. But she knows, even if she's the lady Elaine is the killer, it's like, it's not going to be safe here for you.
One way
or the other. Joffrey's either going to be alive and torture you, or he's going to be dead and people are going to suspect him.
Well, I think Olenna has a lot of Tywin in her. And frankly, she's probably heard the same rumors everyone else has, which is that they haven't consummated the marriage. Mm-hmm. Which means this is your path to one of your grandkids on the throne of the North.
Yeah.
So, Sansa is actually still, even...
She's the heir of the North.
She's the only thing left, or her kid,
They don't know that Bran is alive, so she's...
Right. Or Rickon.
Or Rickon.
Which everyone forgets. Good job, Jason. seriously, man, Rickon.
He doesn't talk.
Well, but it's Bran.
But she gets, she's accumulating power, and until this is why there's so much focus on, that marriage, it's a big chunk of land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just read that in Dorne, women can inherit before men.
Yes.
They have sexual equality and inheritance. So there's totally mixed up down there, just gender-wise. It's just one big swoop. Everyone's not sexual. Like, everyone can inherit.
Let's go check it out.
It's San Francisco.
Yeah.
With more reasonable real estate prices.
Yeah.
But a lot more desert.
A lot more desert.
Dang.
Dang.
And Sansa is wearing Dantos'
She's wearing Dantos'
necklace.
Yes.
There. I have seen the meme... Or the supposed video evidence that possibly that's...
Could be involved. We don't know. No
could
spoilers.
Could be involved, but nobody really knows. And honestly, there are other things that make me wonder how this would have happened this way. So anyway, moving on, we have our musical interlude and the charity announcement. the music.
It's actually the band that does the cover of the Reigns of Castamere over the credits.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask. I couldn't tell who was singing.
It's I don't know how to pronounce it because I've only seen it in text, but it's Sigur Rós. However you pronounce that.
I don't know how to say it either.
But they're reasonably famous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've got their following. But this is the one of two songs. Personally, Bear and the Maiden Fair probably would have been a little more appropriate for a wedding.
Yeah. Well, but it's the Lannister song.
Yeah.
It is, but that's got to be the worst DJ ever.
Oh, like, God,
seriously.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people now are doing in their real weddings are having the Lannister song played at some point.
Oh, my God.
I bet you it's like more than 100.
There's
it's gotta be, right? Khaleesi.
All right, I'm going online right now on YouTube. We're gonna settle this. Keep talking.
All right.
Khaleesi's more popular than Betsy, is it?
Isn't it?
Oh, gosh.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Especially since it's not actually her name, people.
Right.
Yeah.
Title.
It's like,
people
it's like
do name their kids Prince.
Going to be
Prince
nerdy,
and Princess
right.
and Queenie Honey. And all that
her
kind of stuff.
Her name is Boss.
Yeah. There you go.
Right.
Yeah,
Boss
so,
lady.
So
her name is married to a horse lord and viciously raped on her wedding night.
Oh yeah, that's exciting.
That's what I want for
so what is it? Rain the Rains?
Rains of
Castamere.
Yeah.
Or the Lannister song.
Yeah.
It's the other way.
Okay. So here's where I we start it. To see Joffrey going off the rails a little bit. He's just bored as can be. He's like, I can't stand to listen to this music any longer. And he just throws coins at them, and of course they're, you know, bending down and
yeah,
picking
take
up.
Take the money and get
yeah, it's like, that's, take the money and get with your life.
That's like getting a kiss from Joffrey.
Right.
He throws money at you in order to let you go away with all your limbs and organs.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
To be fair, so far I'm kind of with Joffrey.
Yeah.
It kind of
yeah.
sucks.
Yeah,
it kind of
sucks. They were pretty, Yeah.
It takes some balls to, like, suck in front of Joffrey Baratheon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you could be great and he's still going to cut your nose off or something.
Yeah.
Now, good segue, you saying Joffrey Baratheon. Did you realize the color schemes and
right.
the wall behind him? Everything was Lannister gold and red.
Yeah.
Right.
Lannister lions, Lannister yeah. elves. Like, they're not even trying to pretend he's supposed to be a Baratheon.
Yeah, no, it's pretty much the Lannister line at
yeah.
this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, can we talk about those lions? Those things look ridiculous.
Oh, the
jumpy, the inflatable
ones?
House jumpy head lions?
Yeah.
With the plastic balls in there?
Yeah.
It was like they ran out of budget.
I thought they just filmed outside of the MGM Grand.
Yeah, it looked just... It had a certain... I
hated that
it
part.
It looked more like the Chinese dogs to me.
It had a certain Siegfried and Roy...
Yeah.
Like, you know, B show quality to
it. Was like, you spent all this money and did all this other stuff, and then you did that?
It was very MGM Grand.
Yeah.
I thought it was an inflatable jumpy house for a moment there.
Which would have been awesome. Because as entertaining as the War of the Five Kings was, how much better is it in an inflatable jumpy house? This is pretty much true of everything in life.
But yeah, you said it in a jumpy house. It's all that much better.
So before we leave this scene, we have to go through the charity announcement, where
the queen
asks to say a few words and announces that all the leftovers will be given to the poorest in the city. And Cersei, hiding her disdain amazingly, comes over and kisses her on the cheek and says, "You're an example to us all." And I'm just like, she hasn't stabbed her yet? Oh my god.
So she's seen Sons of Anarchy? She's gonna get a fork.
Right?
Like, I need to start stabbing people.
Yeah. It was just.
Wow. Cersei's getting less capable. The drunker she gets, the less capable she is of hiding her disdain.
Oh, she gets seriously drunk here then.
She was never very good. That never was her top talent. Hiding disdain was never like. On her, you know, in her wheelhouse.
No.
But it is not even anywhere near the river at this point. It's up in the hills.
Yeah. It's just like she actually came over and kissed her on the cheek. I'm like, dang, woman, you are seriously. Anyway. Just had to throw that in there. So then we move to Loras, Oberyn, and Jaime.
Yeah.
And we have to put Oberyn in there because. Loras.
Oh, so are you at Oberyn and Tywin?
No.
No, okay, good. Let me know when you are. Obviously, I'll hear
that's a little farther down.
I'll be here.
I'm going to give you a hint, Jason. She's going to say, now we're at
Oberyn
and Tywin.
Yeah, I'll try to pay attention between now.
Well, actually, it's Cersei, Tywin, Oberyn, and Ilaria Sand. But anyway, this is back up with the pillow biters.
Right.
You know, this is the fun interaction between Loras and Oberyn, who's going down on Ilaria and making eyes at Loras. And
all goo-goo eyes, man.
Yeah.
Loras was looking into it. He's like, you can keep the woman, but I can maybe make it work.
Right.
Well, for Loras, there's only one other guy in all of King's Landing who gets with guys. So, like... There's that dude at the brothel,
right? Who's getting with
Ober. Yeah.
So all the guys,
and he's
all
like,
three,
Look, my options just doubled.
Yeah.
How awesome is
that? Out of 1.5 million people, there are 3 gay or bisexual men, one of whom is from out of town.
And
there was another one, but someone killed him with a smoke baby.
And if Renly was his type, then Oberyn would be more his type because he's darker.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and I was thinking he's like the tall, dark, handsome stranger.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, it does not make any sense that there's not a visible gay community in the show, because it's clear that it's legal.
Right.
You know, and maybe there's a little homophobia, but it's not, no one's going to get driven into the closet by at the point of a sword. And so the only thing that's really pushing against it is marriage. Marriage is so freaking economical that you have to marry someone of the opposite gender.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'd be able to find somebody. There should be all male pillow houses ready.
You'd think.
You'd think.
So just as Loras turns around, he bumps into Sir Jaime, and they have a polite little discussion about marriage and if their fathers like the idea of marriage so much, maybe they should get married.
Sir Loras got line of the episode.
Oh yeah,
absolute
he did.
Freaking
yeah,
line
he
of
did.
The episode, line of the season so far.
Yeah,
neither will you.
And so as Jaime says, luckily for you, this will never happen. As he's talking about Cersei murdering him,
right?
Because you will never marry her. And then
and then Sir Loras says, well, neither will you.
Yeah,
it was so
it's like,
snap,
and he walks away with his little.
Talk to the hand, to the real world. The man that can be. This
he
is
should
like
have
a,
done what his Game of Thrones.
Just do a Game of Thrones. This was a Game of Thrones moment. This was such a Game of Thrones moment.
Where are my dragons?
Where are my dragons? It's like I don't think anybody has put. I mean, he's been called Kingslayer. He's been called Betrayer. He's been had his hand chopped off. He's been stored in
sister fucker.
Shit. He's a sister fucker, and people are saying it to him. And he ain't never been put down like this, though.
Yeah, no.
Not that. Just snap. It's one of those way homers. It's like one of those lines you think of on the way home.
Right.
Yeah.
That Loras had it, you know, ready to go.
Yeah, and it just was like, you know,
oh, snap.
Beat. Oh, neither will you.
I would have given $5 for Loras to walk off a frame and for Jaime to track him with his eyes and just go, bitch.
Yep.
That would have been brilliant. It would have broken the scene, but it would have been so good.
Yeah.
So then
maybe
we
that's on the blooper reel.
Yeah. Ooh, that'd be awesome. Then we get the Brienne, Margaery, Cersei intercourse.
Yeah.
Why are you making
interchange?
Interchange.
Yeah, there's no intercourse.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves then.
There's some interesting things here.
I love the bit. I love this Brienne bit.
Yeah, she's you know doing her best to be very polite and very honorable to Margaery. She bows, and of course Cersei makes fun of her for that.
Yeah.
And I am
a knight.
Yeah.
Right, aren't I? And
when Joffrey accuses Brienne of killing Renly, Margaery defends her, which I thought was really magnanimous of her because she had just heard the smoke baby story.
Right. She's buying smoke babies.
Yeah.
She's buying it right out of the can. You can put a plate of smoke baby in front of me and I'll eat it all day.
Yeah.
Right next to Spotted Dick, right?
Right next to Spotted Dick. I totally believe your smoke baby story.
Yeah, so Margaery just lets that all go, and you know, after Margaery puts Joffrey kind of in his place, he's just like done. He doesn't want to talk to her anymore, you know, because she's a big, tall, ugly woman.
Right.
And what fun is she? So as Brienne's walking away, Cersei follows her and. Tells her that she's a lady, whether or not she wants to be, and that she should curtsy. And then we get into the whole Jaime discussion. And all the while this whole discussion is going on, they're both looking back over, you know, Cersei's looking over Brienne to Jaime. Brienne's looking around her shoulder to Jaime.
So
they're both, you know.
When Cersei says, you love him, and she just is stalled.
Right.
Just like what did everyone make of that? Is she feeling Yeah, you know, I kind of got like, my God, I hadn't thought of it, but maybe I do.
Yeah, that was my thought too.
Mixed with how dare you, bitch.
Right.
Mixed with how dare you, but it's like, I wasn't trying to hide this, but I think you tripped something. I think maybe you're right.
Right.
You know, I can't deny it to myself. Yeah. She seemed surprised to me.
Well, I think for Brienne, it falls into a level of respect and honor, but that doesn't necessarily equal love in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
But to everybody else, that's what it would look like.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. There's obviously a lot of speculation about this, but I just don't think Brienne as a character thinks about romantic love in the same way that most other people do.
Yeah.
I think that's probably true.
Been in a place in her life where she's never been accepted that way. And
it's more like the traditional chivalry romantic love. You know,
courtly love.
I think for her, it starts out with acceptance, and as you were saying, respect. And I think for her, it's in that fuzzy place that she's had so little of that in her life that it blends. And I expect that maybe she doesn't even really know. Like, there are times, obviously, Jamie's a good-looking man, and she's a woman, and then you have this person who accepts you and you have a bond and relationship with, and I don't think it's this like full blown like, I'm in love with him, I'm gonna dance in the spring.
I don't think it's sexual or but I think she's sensing a pair bond forming.
Yeah.
That's might be a friendship, but I think she loves him in that respect. I think she's felt that first emotion when Cersei said so.
But I think there are points at times when it's more than friendship. I mean, there's definitely some attraction there. There's when they're in the bath, there's definitely like a spit take, right? There's definitely a couple of moments. But it's not, I don't know. I think for a lot of characters who grow up in a more traditional basis, or a lot of people in a more traditional basis, these things are very defined. Friend,
lover,
romantic interest.
Yeah.
I think for her, this just like, and I think it's great that it showed this way. I think you're right. I think it's kind of occurring to her that I'm not wow, you might be right.
Yeah,
I kind of feel that way, but I don't even know that I am allowed to feel that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, because she's biconceptual about herself. She's like, I'm a woman, but I'm also a knight.
And she's a knight first.
I'm a knight first, and I don't really relate to being a woman very much. I relate to being a knight.
Yeah.
And so, as a knight, I'm not going to fall in love with another knight.
Right.
And Sir Loras walks over and is like, yeah, no, it's okay.
Let's take away the pain.
Yeah, I kind of half expected Brienne to kind of make some expression and then Cersei go, aha, I knew it, you know? Yeah. So it's like a gambit, you know? But Brienne's too cool for school.
She holds it together. And so a little fan service on the dresses, they're really like putting her in the most... they're fitting okay, but these in the books
she's not supposed to.
They're not. She doesn't wear flattering dresses. And this one had a certain like bell shaped quality to it. It just felt a little odd. You know, it's like, I didn't realize you were that small up top, and that armor must really flush you out, because your hips are a lot wider than your chest.
They're really using the camera angles to make her look monstrous, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a little bit in the books. Whenever she's in women's clothes, she's described as being not being really able to work them.
Yeah.
Like armor. She's rather wear armor everywhere she goes.
They keep going back and forth, because Brienne in the books is not an attractive person. And aside from being super tall, Gwendolyn Christie is not a bad-looking woman.
Right.
Yeah, this
is the same with Tyrion.
The same thing with Tyrion. Tyrion's homely in the books.
And freakishly ugly.
Yeah, right. So you can't really effectively do a freakishly ugly character like in a show like this.
Sadly, people will just hate them.
Yeah.
Right. It's sad, but it's the truth of it.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, so continuing with Cersei. She walks back over and catches Master Pycelle. making a little...
putting his Pycelle on.
Yeah. putting out a little offer.
Putting his moves on.
I was like, dang, dude, that's just gross.
You see this charm on my wrist? Maesters only get this one by learning the special tricks.
I got this one for learning the Venus butterfly.
Exactly. That's
right. I'm not judging.
From Venus.
I might be 80.
Right. Anarchy fans.
Come up to my chambers. I'll examine you personally. Like, ew.
This one's called the snowblower. Do you want to know why?
Yeah. And then when Cersei says she'll do no such thing and tells her to see Qyburn, he's quite good. Pycelle calls him a deplorable man who brought shame on the Citadel with
cock-blocked by Cersei Lannister.
Repugnant experiments. And she just goes, oh, more repugnant than your gnarled fingers on that girl's thighs? Like, oh, Cersei's getting it on.
She has her moments.
I do enjoy that the only two doctors in King's Landing, one's like a pervert and the other one like dissects living things. Like, it's just, you're just like, wow.
A vivisectionist and a pervert.
Right.
I'll talk about a pervert.
Talk about a market that's begging for a better option.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so to get rid of Master Pycelle, she sends him away rather rudely, to say the least, and tells him that he needs to go to the kitchens and tell them that the queen is telling them to send the leftovers to the kennels. And when he starts to protest that Queen Marjorie, blah, 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 she is like, no, the queen is telling you. And
I'm still the real queen.
Yeah.
Until midnight.
Yeah.
Until the bedding ceremony, it's on me, and I am going to cash in my last couple of checks here.
So for me, this is where you start to really see that, you know, everything is really an act that she's been doing with Marjorie, and this is the real Cersei coming out. And
well, sure. I mean, last season she said, "If you ever call me sister again, I'll have you killed in your sleep."
Yeah.
So it's not like it's ambiguous.
It's not ambiguous, but yeah. It's up to this point, it's been.
She's kept it together.
It's been a show.
Yeah. She kept it together through bottle one.
Yeah. She's been doing the PC, you know, let's keep the family.
Leave Cersei alone.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of changes going on.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So then we quickly see Dantos being the fool and getting things thrown at his head.
Poor Dantos.
Poor Dantos.
He's a terrible fool, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
He was a terrible knight. But, you know.
Oh. Well,
hopefully he's a better rescuer guy. Yeah, better Sansa transporter. Hope. The Sansporter.
So now we are up to Cersei, Tywin, Oberyn, and Ilaria.
Aha, yes. And so we have a little audio on that. I got to get my Oberyn on every week.
This is a good one, too.
This is a good one.
Really good.
You're in rather a good mood.
Suppose I am.
Why not? Why?
Small pleasures.
Your Grace, Lord Tywin. Prince Oberyn.
I don't believe you have met Ilaria. This is the Lord Hand, Tywin Lannister, and Cersei Lannister, the Queen Regent. I suppose it is former Queen Regent now. Lord Hand, Lady Cersei, Ilaria's son.
My lord, my lady.
John.
Who's ever met a sand before?
We are everywhere in Dorne. I have 10,000 brothers and sisters.
Bastards are born of passion, aren't they? We don't despise them in Dorne.
No, how tolerant of you.
I expect it is a relief, Lady Cersei. Giving up your regal responsibilities. Wearing the crown for so many years must have left your neck a bit crooked.
Suppose you'll never know, Prince Oberyn. It's a shame your older brother couldn't attend the wedding.
Please give him our regards. With any luck, the gout will abate with time and he'll be able to walk again.
They call it the rich man's disease. A wonder you don't have it.
Noblemen in my part of the country don't enjoy the same lifestyle as our counterparts in Dorne.
People everywhere have their differences. In some places, the highborn frown upon those of low birth. In other places, the rape and murder of women and children is considered distasteful. What a fortunate thing for you, former Queen Regent, that your daughter Myrcella has been sent to live in the latter sort of place.
Just badass.
Oh, did we say snap?
I mean, they realize they have to introduce this character, and it's like, he has to go from zero to badass in like 5 seconds.
Yeah, he did. That worked.
We do not have time to fuck around and establish badassery. Things are going to be unhinged. We need a channel for him. He doesn't get a whole season of slowly developing his badass person.
Yeah, this I really like this scene, and I really liked how we see Tywin trying to play the statesman, Cersei just going off the rails again, because she's, her thing, small pleasures, yeah, it's because she's over there just bitching everyone around. And then Oberyn coming in, making the very real threat.
Right. I mean, he just threatened Tywin, right?
Yeah.
He just threatened
Myrcella.
Myrcella,
yeah.
Saying, it's like, we frown upon the rape of our hostages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike some people who killed my sister. Hint, right. Hint. Awkward.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so.
And her children.
Yeah.
Who were much younger than Myrcella.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. So.
Motive.
A little bit.
He's definitely got a motive.
Just a wee bit.
Not knowing anything to come, I mean, I just don't know. I'm very curious to see how Oberyn's gonna exert himself on the situation. Uh-huh. You know, because he basically threatened every one of the Lannisters to their face.
Right.
Yep.
And so now what, dude? You know,
he's gotta deliver.
He's got to deliver.
He's not yet threatened Tommen.
Yeah, so he's got one more Lannister.
You know, but he basically showed up and was like, I'm here to, you know, even the score. I'm very curious to see what this guy's going to do, and it better be the shit, you know, because they're certainly playing him up like a badass.
Maybe you already even the score.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's right. I mean, maybe he's the one who took Joffrey. Who the hell knows? Yeah. I certainly
They're
don't.
Certainly implying that, you know.
Yeah.
Are they really?
Well, he's one of the suspects.
He's the most overtly, you know, like, with murderous rage that we've seen.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this would be a tremendous amount of vengeance
for
him.
Yeah, but it's Joffrey. Get in line. I mean,
oh yeah, no, don't. I mean, you know, I'm not saying. I'm just saying that they definitely play him up as a prime suspect.
Yeah,
you know, among four or five others. You know, sure.
Yeah, but if this were Westeros CSI, I mean, he'd be the King's Landing CSI. You know, he'd be the most obvious suspect. You
right,
know?
He'd be the one who like it's not him. It's the real. It's the celebrity guest star.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah, it's clearly Eric Bogosian. It's not going to be this other guy.
So then we get to the awkwardness. The battle scene. Joffrey announcing, "Oh, there's been so much amusement here today, but a royal wedding isn't amusement, it's history." And
So did Joffrey have someone dressed up like him?
Yes.
Yes.
That is a surprisingly sophisticated humor for Joffrey.
It is.
I'm giving him a lot of credit there.
Yeah.
To allow himself to be depicted.
I mean, if sophisticated is allowing his character to literally shove a sword up the ass of Renly's character,
that's
yes.
Simplistic in its execution, but, you know, he's allowing himself to be made mock of, which a king has to do.
Yes. But only in that he's... But he's supposed to, as being the
he's
king.
Supposed to win, yes. Of course.
The victorious king who slayed everyone.
Right.
Slew? Whatever.
Who slew Eddie Rue.
Yeah, and so this is where there are lots of things being said, but from this point going forward in the episode, the real story is happening on the faces of people that aren't speaking.
Yeah.
Because as soon as he says that, it's like the looks from Tyrion and Sansa, and
yeah, just the seething on Tyrion.
Yes.
When he sees it come out.
And as this wonderful little comic relief continues and goes on, and, you know, they bring out the little people, they see the very comic costumes they have on.
They managed to rehearse all that in secret, too. Mm-hmm. They managed to keep this thing secret.
Yeah, they would have had to.
Yeah, Joffrey pulled off quite a little coup.
It's probably his strongest execution ever.
It's horrible and insulting, but, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry?
This is probably his strongest execution ever. I mean,
yeah,
really.
This is probably the most sophisticated thing he's ever pulled off.
Yeah. But then we get to see the epic ridiculousness of the big lion's mouth and the red carpet. Whatever. the costumes were definitely I don't know, what do you call it? Toilet humor?
Low humor.
Low humor. Low humor.
I can't call low humor the point at which the Baleen Greyjoy bops Varys over the head with his, like, war hammer.
Yeah,
that was comic gold. Because the look on Varys' face was just,
however,
just fantastic.
We can, now that we've seen it, it's aired. Alan, why don't you do the honor of telling how that was written in the book?
Oh.
It was much wilder.
This is from our spoiler section last week. Yeah.
Gosh. Yes. Yeah, so
did
they
wait to the book's published.
So it was it wasn't a little fifth grade, you know, play.
No, no. They they took a couple little people, put one on a
pig, right?
One on a pig, one on a dog, which apparently they wanted to do. If you read the interview, they're like, so apparently you can't ride the pig. It's apparently unfair to the pig. And they're like, you could have the pig ride the man, but it didn't really work.
Yes.
Like, that's fantastic.
I was pretty sure they weren't going to do the pig ride.
Yes, and they jousted each other, and they play back and forth, and then that,
yeah. And it wasn't the War of the Five Kings, it was just two guys.
No, yeah, well, it was a sister and brother.
Right,
was,
right.
You'll learn at some point. But
okay, but it was not, it didn't have this meaning.
And it was, yes, it becomes particularly nastier, the sequence between Joffrey trying to get Tyrion to jump on the pig.
Yeah.
Becomes a little more pronounced.
Right. Yeah, people were online were complaining that, you know, that this was pretty humiliating. It's like, man, you need to have read the chapter. A little wine on your head is nothing.
Yeah. So while we see the battle going on, the camera pans around and you see all these distasteful looks from the people sitting up at the high table. Loras actually gets up and leaves in disgust.
Right.
Marjorie is covering her face in disbelief and embarrassment. oh my God, what a moron. Sansa and Tyrion, still hoping that looks could kill, look even more shocked at how low Joffrey would go to humiliate them personally.
Yeah.
Because he took special pains to make sure that there was a battle between the King Joffrey little person and the Rob Stark little person.
Yeah, King, and they did the whole King of the North.
And then the King Joffrey has sex with the wolf's head.
The skull,
yeah.
There's a skull fucking.
Yes, yeah, there's a skull fucking.
Which is tradition. You know, so George R. R. Martin, I have to sympathize here. I don't like weddings either.
Yeah. No, really
but
don't
skull
either.
Skull fucking a wolf, a decapitated wolf, never has occurred to me at any wedding. I've been in some bad weddings. I've been in some bad ones. But no.
Yeah.
Reaction-wise, I love that, you know, Cersei was laughing along, and Tommen, who wasn't quite getting it, was joking until Tyrion looks at him and is like, seriously, kid, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, oh, yeah. oh, this is bad.
But that's the thing.
Because that was fun. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny when you're 7 or 8.
Right. Yeah. Or 12.
Or especially if you're still in the books, he's like...
He's really young, like, in the books. I think they aged
jacked
him up a little.
Yeah,
but that's one of the other telling things is that Cersei and Joffrey are the only people enjoying this, and mm-hmm. a few of the people in the audience who aren't
again,
as close.
Why Cersei is a good time.
Yeah,
laughing her ass off.
Yeah, she thinks it's hysterical. The people sitting out in the tables, some are laughing. The ones who are characters in the show are absolutely mortified and angry at this sort of thing being done. Marjorie becomes utterly disgusted and is not hiding it anymore. And by the time we get to the point where the King Joffrey is fucking the wolf's head, Sansa is horrified. Marjorie is looking at Joffrey like, someone please tell me I don't have to sleep.
Did we get the pull in on Sansa at this point? I forget when that comes.
I think we did.
Okay, so that
it's actually right after that because
okay.
I have a note here that all the blood, the fear, has now drained from Sansa's face, and it's just been replaced with this absolute rage.
Because I was hearing that Kill Bill scene,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Murder cue, and I'm like, maybe the Stark girl's got to get her murder on.
Yeah.
Did both Stark girls get
murdered? Wrong Stark girl.
No. Two Stark girls, two murder aunts.
She was
like, just swords were coming out of her eyes.
Yeah.
At the contempt for what she was saying.
And even, by the end of this, Cersei's just laughing like it's the best little prank. And Tywin, who was clearly not amused, tries to soothe things over by clapping politely, and Lady Olenna is the absolute picture of humiliation and rage.
Yeah.
She paid for this crap. She's marrying into this family.
Marrying into this horror.
Oh my god. And then we get into Joffrey's authority.
Authority.
Yeah. And he's about to give the performers the champion's purse. And he goes, oh, but surely there are others who would challenge my reign. And then he calls on Tyrion. I'm sure they have a spare costume. Really? Why didn't we get to smack him? Honestly?
I like how Tyrion, just tells him, well, it's like, well, it was an impressive performance of the victory, but not nowhere near as good as you. Maybe you should go down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Show him how it's really done.
Exactly.
You know, he can't help himself. He just can't help himself. Nah. You know, he tries to do the deferential thing, but he can't.
Yeah, and he tells him to be careful that this one is full of lust. Yeah. Be a tragedy to lose your virtue hours before your wedding night.
Because there's nothing like making an anal sex joke to someone who's obviously, like, about to kick your ass.
Yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, oh, man, awkward. Man.
So I'm going to calm me down a little bit, and then I'm going to be like, and you like it in the butt.
Yes.
Butt.
And this is when Joffrey just goes over the edge. Pours his wine on him, and... of course, even for Tywin, who's really trying to hold it together, he's still got this look of disgust and rage. And
this is a good little callback to earlier in the episode when he spills the wine on his own table. This is just wine.
It's just wine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So
Tyrion,
is that.
Tyrion.
It's just wine, Tyrion.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just wine. And he's definitely realizing at this point what's happening. And he's trying to be submissive, and he's like, oh, fine vintage, shame it's spilled. And Joffrey's picking a fight now. He's gone all schoolboy, you know,
he's provoking the playground. Him as hard as he possibly can.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, it didn't spill. And Margaery tries to break it up by saying, you know, come back to me, it's time for my father's toast.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this just gives him more fuel for the fire because, oh, how am I supposed to toast without wine?
Right. I need a cupbearer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tyrion's not getting out of this. He orchestrated an entire little people war at his own wedding to piss off his uncle.
There's no backing down.
There's no backing down.
We are in. We're all the way in.
And I just had a question. Yeah. The whole cupbearer thing, wasn't that Arya's honor
With Tywin.
With Tywin.
Yeah, Arya was Tywin's cupbearer.
Yeah. Yeah. So we know how low that title really is.
Oh, no, nobles are not cupbearers.
No. No. Yeah.
Actually, mostly adults are not cupbearers. It's a child's job.
Right.
By and large.
Right.
And there was a great line here that so they really have constructed a lot of Joffrey based on Caligula from My Claudius. You know, familiar with that one.
Uh-huh.
And he has a great line here where he says, "Well, I need Uncle be my cupbearer," and he says, "You do me an honor," and he says, "It wasn't intended to be an honor." And Caligula used to do that all the time when he would do something insulting to someone, and the person would try to be obsequious and try to say, "Oh, you honor me by." Fucking my wife in public, and it's like, was it meant to be an honor? You're supposed to be angry at me. And so you can't win. If you're angry at him, he's going to kill you for being angry at him. And if you're not angry at him, he's going to kill you for not doing the right, not reacting the right way.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Where am I?
Cupbearer.
Tyrion continues to try and submit. Joffrey continues to pick the fight. With all the onlookers, except Cersei, of course, feeling all the more tense and nervous that something distasteful and embarrassing is for all involved is about to take place. And so Joffrey drops the cup when Tyrion comes around and then kicks it away from him, and we see Sansa pick it up and hand it back to Tyrion.
And they basically pass it around the whole wedding party just to make everybody a suspect.
Yeah.
It's like, who wants to get their fingers in this thing?
You want to hold over this?
Right. Drop something in here. Drop something in for the king.
Yeah. Then he demands that Tyrion fill the cup, and Tyrion takes the wine that was in front of Cersei,
Right.
Fills the cup, hands it to Joffrey, and then Joffrey starts demanding that he kneel. And then comes what I think is one of the best lines in the entire show. Look, the pie!
I'm going to be using that one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was
like
it was
the ADD. Look, the chicken. Yes. I don't have ADD.
Oh, look, the pie.
Right. It's going to be right up there with squirrel.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Ooh, squirrel pie.
Yeah, yes. So Marjorie tries to break it again, and the pie comes out. And so Joffrey takes his giganto sword and cuts open the pie with it, and all these birds fly out.
Except for two.
Okay, yeah. I was like, it's amazing that any of them made it out alive, considering what he was doing to that pie. Everyone thinks the tension is finally broken. Sansa's like, can we just get the fuck out of here? And as they're trying to leave, Joffrey says, oh, uncle, you can't leave. You're my cupbearer. The pie is dry. I need more wine. And then we get to the death scene. Because this is where he starts choking.
Yeah.
And he chokes a little. And you think it's just the pie being dry. And then he chokes a little more. And then he chokes some more.
Nothing like dry pie in a wedding night.
No, no kidding. No,
hey, dry wedding pie.
Yeah.
I'm sure you would know all about that.
See on with the line. I think we can just shut down the podcast. Like, she's been at it for like 40 minutes. Damn. Yeah, drops that sucker.
That's
literally drops.
That's what we call the drop
in
the Sion bomb. Yeah. You hang Damn. Back and you wait for your moment.
Well, I have to be inspired.
Yeah. So, by dry pie.
Plus, for people not knowing some of the noise, so we decided to let the little dog Tyrion in tonight. And when I had to read and kept saying the word Tyrion, he decided to get out of his bed area and come crawling in my lap, and it's just been a circus. Because we keep saying Tyrion, and he's been in and out.
We're confusing the hell
out
of him.
I'm going in and out of the room. He's racing to the backyard, barking. It's just...
He might end up being more of a Sons of Anarchy guest than a...
I don't know. Well, he's still in training. Still. Oh, my God. I didn't predict that one. Sorry.
So we have a little listener feedback on...
Joffrey's death.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got Irene Bailey Bird. I, for one, was slightly disappointed by the way Joffrey went out. I just knew he would die by sword, maybe tortured a little bit. I like Irene.
That's what we thought Ramsay Bolton was for.
Bring on the talent.
The kid knows what he's doing. He's a go-getter.
Yeah, he would even like play with the crossbow theme and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Joffrey really could have gotten a run for his money.
Those two Joffrey were quite a pair.
Run for his dry pie. Maybe tortured a bit, but I will take his death anyway. I can get it. So who will be next to go to that big castle in the sky? And Philip the Zeerman. You're all assuming that Joffrey was poisoned and that this wasn't really just an illustration of why one doesn't have red wine with poultry. I'm hoping on the deleted scenes we have the actor who played Joffrey doing a public service announcement about the importance of picking the right type of wine to go with the meal. And then a cutaway to Peter Dinklage saying, no, actually, the real lesson from tonight's episode was never to piss off the people who handle your food and drink.
That's true. I learned that one on Fight Club.
And Christina Scanapeggio. I don't have spoiler knowledge. Sansa has motive and the look.
Yeah, that look was some Kill Bill.
Oberon has seriously. Motive and the balls. But I always wondered why Lady Olenna seems so unconcerned with the fact that her granddaughter may be tortured, abused, or brutalized by her future husband. Could explain her no-worries attitude about it all. Nikki Ebright, like any good murder mystery, I think the clues are all laid out for you to see, but you're not supposed to actually notice them until you know more, and then go back and look again. I think that's one of the reasons Psych was so popular. It reviewed and highlighted the clues for us that we had already seen.
Hmm. I've seen a couple of Psychs.
Yeah.
I think it was just the pop culture references.
Okay, so how many people on the cast actually know the answer?
I believe that
I do.
Alan and Daniel and I would
We're
know.
The only two that have read
I believe that I've been cheated in.
So okay. We know what the books say, and we will have. Oh, by the way, we will have a traditional spoiler section in a few minutes. So when we play out the out music, drop out because
we're going there.
Post there. We're going there, and we'll have our spoiler talk. But it's set up as a nice mystery on the show.
Uh-huh. Okay, so Molly, you're the only one like me who doesn't know the answer.
Right.
Who's your money on?
You know, at the beginning of the scene, it was on like Lady Olenna, maybe Marjorie, because they have motive and they're the closest to the cup. But when I looked at the video again, Lady Olenna is at the next table over, and there's enough space that between the tables that it would be extremely obvious if she got up and tried to get over to the cup. The cup is sitting right in front of Marjorie when they pick it up for the last time when he takes a drink from it. The other thing I wonder is how fast acting is the poison? Could it have been poisoned earlier? Mm-hmm. Is it iocane powder? I don't know.
No, Joffrey built up a resistance.
No, Marjorie did.
It's going to be right. It's an anaphylactic poison, so it's going to be very, very fast.
What about you, Shane?
My money's on Sansa.
Okay.
Because I think she's been boiling with rage against this guy for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, she may have had collaborators, but to me, she's the one that, you know, when Joffrey just rubs it in her face day after day, and she looks increasingly desperate, especially in episode one of this season,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so to me, that's where it's... Sansa's got to be the one.
She definitely has motive.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the only person we can eliminate is Cersei.
Yeah.
she would never poison wine.
Never wine.
No.
Speaking
of Cersei and wine, is she sexy enough?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest,
wait, she's got over the...
I haven't gotten to the best part for you.
Go.
Yeah, so just...
It's just for you, Alan.
Yeah, it is. I saw it and I was
she
like, oh, this is
you.
Alan's thing. So just a couple
what,
of really...
Choking?
No. On Cersei. On Cersei. There were a couple of really good lines before we close out the death scene. Lady Olenna gets up and shouts, "Idiots, help your king!" I love that. And this is where Dantos comes up and offers Sansa the chance to get away.
Yep, Dantos escape.
And I keep thinking, hasn't she heard this before? And she's not taken that offer?
Yeah,
no, she's under significantly different circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's a little bit bigger. And then, you know, we see Joffrey on the ground and Cersei holding him. And then we get this overhead shot right down Cersei's dress. And I was like, oh, Alan.
I won't say I didn't notice.
And it doesn't go away for many seconds.
By the way, someone can fill me in on Jack Gleason's
acting. I believe those are supposed
Gleason's
to be maternal bosoms. Bosoms of purity. These are not sexy bosoms. That's her son. That's her baby.
You take what you can get.
Yeah. Take what you can get. All
right. I was like, oh, that's the Alan shot.
The Alan wench.
I was actually DP on this episode.
We need more boobies.
Oh my god.
So then when you look back up at the high table after he starts choking and he starts pointing, Marjorie's turned away towards the high garden table, so she's no longer up at the royal table area. Cersei, partially because Cersei just shoved her all the way over to get down off the raised area. And everyone else has pretty much walked away. The only person left up in that area is Tyrion, and he's holding the cup, looking at, like, well, how did that happen?
What?
Yeah. And it's like, well, that was kind of stupid.
Yeah.
and then we get the take him, take him, take him madness.
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was interesting in the inside the episode piece with the directors was that they were really really pleased at the way Lena Headey and Jack
Gleason
during this scene, they both said that the characters just fell away and all the evilness of their characters fell away. Uh-huh. And you saw this young, helpless boy dying in his mother's arms and this mother that can do nothing to help her son and the grief that that gave her. And so it makes them slightly more human than if they had just maintained that evil character all the way through.
It's the redeeming quality of the Lannisters that they actually do love sincerely.
Right.
Maybe not Joffrey, but the others do. Yeah. All the others, you know, but it all turns to spite and vengeance and stuff. But they actually, Tywin loved his wife. Jaime and Cersei love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrion, you know, loves Shae and loves his, you know, his.
And it's a little bit more obvious in the books when he chokes. The uh-huh. same way yeah. in the books, but mm. the way it goes down, it's a little more obvious that he's still a little kid. I mean, he's younger in the books.
Right.
He's, you know, he's screaming for his mother actually.
Yeah.
You know, when he when he starts dying, and then there's sort of that. A couple of writers out there, reviewers, Alyssa Rosenberg was one of them, and I think Amanda Marcotte was another, wrote about this whole concept of like, hey, was this Ramsay stuff and a couple of the other sequences in here that were actually pretty cruel, is this just a big setup for the audience?
Right.
That you sit most of the episode judging people for being pretty awful to everyone around them.
Right.
Right, the entire time. And then at the end, you have, you know, YouTube videos of people screaming, yes, die, die.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, do we think it was set up to...
to be like the infectious nature of cruelty kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's all your perspective. You, hey, I mean, not saying Joffrey didn't deserve it, but is there some component here of, like, you know, people really wanted Joffrey to die to the point that maybe their personal ethics...
Well, this show, this particular episode, and I don't think it's just because Martin wrote it, I think it is on that theme, all of the segments emphasize sadism in some way. You have mm-hmm. people being burned alive. Mm-hmm. You know,
yes.
You have, you have the Boltons. I guess not Bran, but that was like a two-minute
talk
scene.
About beating their child
right.
at Stannis.
Yeah, and just the cruelty of the world. You know, all the sequences, I think, except for Bran's.
But even in Bran, they talk about him losing his
humanity. Oh, and he's losing his humanity. That's right. So he's losing his humanity to a dog, and he's going to attack something and kill it and eat it, and for no good purpose to himself, because he can't get any nutritional value out of it.
Right, because it's more fun than sitting there not walking.
And I think, and that's actually a good point, Alan. I hadn't thought of it that way, that, you know, Bran is experiencing an almost pure version of this,
mm-hmm.
which is it's more fun to be this cruel predator than it is to be what I am.
Right.
Even if being so is draining me of all of my capacities and not helping me in any way, really. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all your humanity.
Yeah. So that was the theme, is humanity being drained out of people. Theon has had his humanity drained out of
yes.
him. Joffrey has his humanity drained out of him. Tyrion has his humanity denied and drained
and
out
I think
of him.
Part of the point of Joffrey's death as it was, mm-hmm. with a little bit of, you know, mother-son relationship there, Jaime running in, is you kind of get it on the audience too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you cheered that, I think there's some part that's kind
of
like,
you're cheering the death of a child.
You're cheering the death of
an awful child.
Don't get me wrong, but you're still and people were like, I wanted it to hurt more, right?
Yeah,
there was
feedback.
And that's like 85%, so I'm not singling this person out, but it's just interesting.
I'm in a minority. I had this reaction. I read this sequence of the book, and I'm pleased, and I think it's the right element of the story, but I didn't have a very strong reaction to it. I'm like, yeah, that's good, I'm glad that guy's dead. I had a much more positive reaction to the Red Wedding. I was like, God we are done with these people. You know, whereas with Joffrey, it's like, you could have kept him alive, you could have had him in every book, because he's just a ponce, right?
Yeah.
And there's just another chapter of him running around with his sword pretending he's the king, who cares? Right, whereas Rob was actually draining the story of its life, like a vampire. And I was just so pleased. And I'm like, I'm the only person on the internet. It's like, what's wrong with all you people? This is marvelous. And so I didn't really cheer Joffrey's death so much as like, yeah, that's good. That was what should happen to him, and it'll help move the story forward. But he could have lived through this plot.
Well, it's nice that the bad guys have consequences too.
He could have suffered. He could have had terrible things happen to him, and that would have been fine. Or not suffered, and that's the lesson. I'm much more neutral on Joffrey than I have been on others, because he's ineffective, not a thing. He's a non-entity mm-hmm. in a lot of ways.
Think if the Melisandre scene with the daughter could have been a bit stronger. I mean, I thought it was all really reinforcing the we're in hell, you know, quote from her.
Yeah, I feel
like
they wrote the line and then wrote
and
the
then
scene
around.
And
then the scene around, this is all what hell looks like.
Right. I mean, because, you know, I mean, it's all reinforcing the same thing.
Okay, we're running long, and I want to do a little bit of spoilers, so we're going to wrap it up here and then roll on. So if you're not interested in being spoiled at all, make sure you drop out before the music ends. And until next week, you know, it's only wine. Okay, now we are back for spoilers, and so I suppose we really, really, we're going to talk about Bran for about 20 minutes. We do. What is up with the three-eyed raven? Where's
the,
I'm so
the
cold.
The
mystery of the three-eyed raven is so compelling. Okay, so let me see if I can do it, because I am the youngest book reader here.
Do our non-readers actually want to be spoiled?
Do you want to know
what's
in the book?
Oh, absolutely.
Before, you've been totally happy about it, so I just want to make sure that
I'm not a... Spoilers don't bother me in the slightest.
Yeah,
so let me see if I got this right. In the book, the poison is in the hairnet that Sansa is given. That is not the necklace. It's a hairnet.
But it's the necklace in the show.
It's a necklace in the show. In the book, it's a hairnet.
Yes.
And I believe... I'm not sure if I actually got this right. That is... Olenna Martell.
So,
knows the poison's there, acquires it during the wedding, and drops it in.
And very clearly in the show, she's playing with her necklace.
Yes.
And they're actually, you can see screenshots because people immediately did.
Yes.
The furthest right, if you're looking at Sansa, left on her is gone.
Right.
And like the last couple of scenes. So, Olenna does grab a piece of the necklace and palms it.
And Alina was touching her hair.
Yeah.
Right.
She was playing with the necklace.
So we think that they're going to go straight with what's in the book, that Elena did it.
Well, so in the book, what we know, and we'll at least learn this later from a first person, that this was arranged actually by Littlefinger and Elena to get rid of Joffrey. And Dantos. And Dantos was the go-between, and he gave her the hairnet, and Elena takes it. They're never really clear whether it was Elena or Marjorie that drops it in the wine.
Right.
Yeah.
You never learn that because there's no Tyrell point of view. They don't talk to anyone. You only learn about Littlefinger's interaction because later he brags
and
about
we,
it to
we
Sansa.
We haven't seen Baelish yet in the
season.
No. We're about to see.
He's going to be down at the dock. Dantos' Russian.
That's right.
Down
and he's the person that orchestrated this because, you know, chaos is a ladder, yada, yada, yada.
So he's going to reveal to Sansa what happened.
He does. I don't think he does it immediately. I think he does it much later. But I assume that they'll keep it a little quiet, but I mean, once he's there,
right,
you're kind of like, hey, wait, what's going on?
So now, in watching the scene, I felt very strongly that that they might make it Sansa herself, just from the pure murderous rage. Shot,
right?
It was just so but I think that's just to make her a suspect. It doesn't really mechanically work.
I think they worked very hard to make a lot of suspects, which I thought was great.
Yeah, so
and
like
much different.
Oberyn is a red herring. The Sansa Linger is definitely I was almost convinced.
Yeah.
Until I realized it actually doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And she's part of it. She just is unknowingly part of it.
Yeah, not knowingly part of it.
But they've also on the show made it very physically hard for Lady Olenna to put something in the cup.
Right.
You know, because there is clearly a very distinct separation between the tables.
And I think that's consistent with the book in the sense, or with the way the show has gone with the book, in the sense that in the book, you're never really certain whether Margaery is the sweetest girl on earth.
Right.
Or incredibly calculating. Uh-huh. And it goes back and forth. And you never see her out of her act.
Right.
Right? But so you're always kind of wondering. Like, Elena, you get her as a calculating person. But Marjorie is always Marjorie.
Yeah.
Most wonderful person you've ever met.
Yeah.
But in the show, they've made it very clear that Marjorie is very calculating. So I could totally see them working her in.
Right.
So since we're talking spoilers, next on she says, well, you know, I now I'm nothing. I would have been queen. So it feels like she probably didn't.
Yeah.
It's like I would have waited a week or two. I would have survived that long and then killed him once I was solidly in as the queen.
Yes.
You know, but
I think that's part of the reason why they showed Tywin and Olenna talking. to reestablish that no matter what happens, the Lannisters need the Tyrells right now.
Right.
Because they need the cash flow.
Right.
And so,
the food.
And that,
and
I think
food.
That's what Elena's going to tell her. It's like, dear girl, we can write our ticket.
Right.
And Tommen is still...
Seriously, right. You're going to have your third wedding.
Yeah. You have your third wedding, you're still a virgin, technically. No questions asked.
Yeah. Right. So, well, we know she didn't consummate with Joffrey.
Yeah. Or Renly.
Or Renly.
Renly is tough. So, okay, yeah. So, no, what I love is that there is no scuttlebutt among people who haven't read the book that the necklace has jack shit to do with this. And so I'm looking forward to the reveals on people who are staying. You can find it on the internet, obviously, if you're
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's getting out as memes, but from among people who have not seen it at all, I'm interested in what the reaction is going to be when they find out that it's Dantos and Necklace and Baelish and this whole big conspiracy.
If they can manage to stay away with it. I do think it's somewhat ridiculous the number of people who posted everything up and pretended they hadn't read the books. I'm sorry. I don't believe you.
Yeah,
you found that in 12
right.
minutes
yeah.
at
no.
the end of the episode
right.
and posted it on your blog with 50 words.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Like,
no. Not buying
yeah,
it.
Not buying it, Columbo.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. No. Or you don't even have to read the books. You have to read that chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And, or you don't have to read the chapter. You
just
read the chapter summary.
Yeah.
On the
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia will get you everything you need.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's obviously the only big big spoiler to discuss. Do we have anything else we want to go to before we head out?
I thought you really wanted to talk about Bran for 20 minutes.
I got to know about that bird. I got to know about that bird. I have to eat every fucking chicken in this place. I'm going to find out about that bird.
Yeah, I think Bran means that one a lot more than Arya.
Okay, kids, thank you very much for spoilers, and we will see you next week.
Yay.
Bye.
Yay.
Bye.